Today, oh goodness gracious, today is January 20th, 2021. This is episode number 542 of the Apple Context Machine. That's a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Brian Chaffin, Archbishop of Canterbury. To get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, you can visit macobserver.com/ACM. And if you'd like to comment on or question anything about the show, you can shoot me a note over at macobserver.com/contextmachine. That'll take you straight to our Facebook group. Now, joining me today from my original home state, Bob Dr. Mac Levitas.
Who is not a bishop of anything.
So sorry to hear that, man.
However, the S lady refers to me as Your Highness.
As she should.
As well she should.
As well she should, yeah.
Hey, thanks for having me, Brian. You know how much I love podcasting.
Oh, thank you, Bob.
As long as someone else is, you know, managing it.
I know how that works. Now,
people always say to me, why don't you have a podcast? And I go, are you kidding? That's so much work. I just like being guest on somebody else's podcast.
It is a lot easier to do it that way.
Way easier.
You know what else also is easy, Bob?
What?
It's hearing about our sponsor, Molecule. It's a sponsor. I'm going to tell you about them later in the show.
Okay.
And exactly how we're going to do that. Okay, so our first topic today is HomePod Mini.
Yes.
Yeah, you got one.
I got two.
You got two.
I have two.
Do you have regular HomePods?
No. Because I didn't need another $400 speaker. I really didn't need another $99 speaker either. But for $400, I wasn't very interested in the original HomePod.
Mm. Okay.
Even after they dropped the price, I still wasn't.
Sure.
I mean, I'm up to my ears in speakers. And I mean that literally.
Sure.
I have at least one good speaker in every room of the house. And I have a bunch of good battery, you know, portable speakers. For the rooms that don't have a real speaker, it just, you know, being in this business as long as I've been in it, I've collected lots of speakers, most of which are pretty good.
Sure.
So I was in no need of another $400 worth of speaker. And as I learned when I got the HomePod Minis, I'm also not the best candidate for it because almost all of my home automation stuff isn't HomeKit.
What are you using?
I mean, so much of it I can't control through the S lady without jumping through hoops. But it all works with Alexa. Oop, I said it.
Uh-oh, you did. You said the A word.
I said the A word. Anyway, so for me, you know, the whole smartness of the smart speaker is kind of lost because, like, the lights in my office don't respond to the S lady.
Hmm.
You know, so I get some of it is my fault. I got it without thinking about whether I cared if it was HomeKit compatible. And some of it might or might not be actually HomeKit compatible. Like I've got some Philips Hue stuff that supposedly works great with HomeKit.
Yeah.
But I can't get it to recognize the hub. So it works with the A lady, but not.
But you tried.
I've tried many times.
So why'd you get two of them?
Two what? Oh, because Apple sent me two to try. They wanted me to try the intercom feature, which we'll talk about. But they wanted me to have that option and the option of saying, you know, play this song in the kitchen, play this song in the office.
Sure.
And then also putting them in the same room and saying, play it as a stereo pair.
Sure. Or even play that on all speakers.
Or play it everywhere,
which I've done. And
I like
really
that,
like.
By the way.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like that, except that the analog to that for me is I play it on a Bluetooth speaker, which I pick up and carry with me if I leave the room. And it's like, well, you know, that isn't a bad idea. I mean.
I don't want to have to carry my speakers around. I want to, you know, well, Bob, my whole thing.
I would rather carry my speaker around than buy another speaker that has to be plugged in somewhere.
Hmm.
It's like, to me, the portability is a good thing.
So what do you...
Because I also go out on my back deck sometimes. I go in the garage and work in... I actually put a good speaker out there. I had a Marley speaker it's a stereo speaker, Bluetooth.
Listen, Bob, I've been in your garage. I know what the Marley device is.
Okay. So I put that out there finally, but I used to just drag my Mega Boom with me when I went to the garage.
Come on, Bob. That was funny, man.
That was funny. Ba-da-ba.
So what do you control the A-Lady through?
I have a bunch of Echoes and Echo Dots around the house. I mean, they were really cheap.
Sure.
I have a bunch of the little ones that you hook up to another speaker.
Mm-hmm.
So they're, the Echo Dots are hooked up to better speakers. And there's one of those in the kitchen. And I've got the bigger Echo that's actually a pretty good speaker, the, you know, big tube one in my office. And there's one more somewhere in the house. Oh, I know. Out by my workbench, I've got one of the Echo Dots connected to the Marley speaker. And that pretty much covers me for everything I need to do, no matter where I'm standing. Okay. I wish I could do it all through the S-Lady, because then I could just talk to my watch or my phone rather than having to be proximal to one of those three speakers.
Well, this is my thing. I don't think that you have personally, now my longtime listeners and listeners to TVO and listeners to Chuck's show when I'm on will have heard me talk about this. But what I want from a smart home is to talk to the air and to never think about the device.
That would be awesome.
I don't want to lift my wrist up to my face. Don't want to pull my phone out of my pocket. I want to speak to the air. I want to have S-Lady take care of my stuff.
And I thought for sure the HomePod minis were going to solve that so that I could just, you know, issue commands. But without putting in something like HomeBridge, or there's another thing,
Because of your existing products.
Right. And it's like when I move to a new house, I'll probably scrap my existing home stuff and go with all stuff that's HomeKit. But that's because I'm going to put in a new doorbell and I'm going to put in new cameras. And, you know, I'm going to need to replace a lot of the stuff that I've got now. So next time I would probably make sure that what I get works with the S-Lady.
Which is what I didn't so far. I have at my home. And I ended up getting the HomePod Mini, A, to test it and because I could. But B, because I wanted a speaker in my kitchen as well, and I have very, very little counter space. I have a poorly designed kitchen.
Okay.
And I didn't have room for a HomePod, and I really don't want a HomePod in the kitchen anyway. So the Mini was perfect, stuck it in the kitchen, and now I've got one essentially in every room. And I can speak to the air, and that's great, and that's glorious.
Do you wear an Apple Watch?
I do.
Well, because mine, I don't have to lift anything up to talk to it.
You don't always have to. That is for sure, though you can. We actually talked about this on Wednesday's TDO. We were talking about some various Apple Watch tips, but it is still not as
airy as having a little teeny speaker on the table that
I want to hear everything you say. I want to speak to the air and have my home controlled.
Okay.
I do not want to worry or think about the device. Now, that said, what I found with my HomePod Mini is that it'll send a command and then tell me it didn't hear back from the device. And then a few seconds later, the device will do the thing that it was commanded to do.
That happens on my watch also. So like, for example, I can say, turn off the light on my workbench, and it'll say, I'm having trouble doing that. And then, you know, 4 seconds later, it'll turn off.
Right. And I only have that problem with the HomePod Mini. And I don't know if it is the location vis-a-vis the Wi-Fi network or if it is something specific to the HomePod Mini. But
I don't think so, because I get it from my watch. Yeah.
Yeah, that's interesting.
I have that same issue when I do it from my watch. So, not always, but occasionally.
Now, I'm guessing that compared to your A-Lady devices, the HomePod Mini sounded much better.
Yes. However, remember, all of my A-Lady devices except one are plugged into better Bluetooth speakers.
Mm, right.
So because I had better speakers here, Echo Dots plugged into a good speaker turned out to be a really economical solution because the speakers were already in all those rooms. This was just like adding the A-Lady to those speakers. And right. It was a lot cheaper than $99. Now, I have to say, the HomePod Minis are the best sounding speaker that size I've ever heard.
Yeah, that size.
But that size, that's it. There are bigger speakers that cost less that sound better to my ear.
I agree with that.
So if you're looking for just, you know, pure audio quality, the HomePods, there's a place for them. And you actually are in the sweet spot because you have all HomeKit stuff. You want that. And so for you, that's a good probably $99 investment. But for somebody that just is looking for, you know, good sound and the ability to say, hey, S-Lady, play this song for me. There are other options that I think, you know, are equally good, maybe better, and cost less. And the thing is, I was pretty high on HomePod Mini until I tried the intercom feature. Intercom is like, it's like, I got errors almost every time I tried to use it.
I haven't used intercom yet. So,
well, yeah, that's the thing is, I wanted to test it all. So I thought, oh, this is really cool. So if I'm out on a walk with my iPhone or my watch, I can say, hey, S-Lady, tell the kitchen speaker it's time for dinner. And the kitchen speaker will, you know, broadcast my message. It's time for dinner. If somebody's in the kitchen, they can start talking and I'll hear it on my watch or my phone from a block away or a couple blocks away when I'm out for a walk. I thought that's a really cool thing. But you'll see in the column that I'm going to turn in next week, I have some, I saved some screenshots of stuff that came up on my watch. And oh, wait a minute, maybe I did that one already. In the hopper. So anyway, I had some, I don't know if I used any of the screenshots, but I described them. You don't need pictures anyway. It was I was disappointed and you know, a little surprised because it felt like a feature that like wasn't fully baked yet, that I should have an error messages almost every time I tried to use it. It's not usual for Apple. Usually it just works.
So let me,
except when it doesn't.
Let me make another note about sound quality. When,
okay.
When playing the HomePod Mini with the other HomePods in my house, and I've got a relatively small home, your home is much bigger than mine. The sound, it just, you know, basically it makes everything sound better in the kitchen, but the HomePod Mini definitely does not sound as good as the HomePod. And of course it does not sound as good as the HomePod because it's a $100 speaker and not a, you know,
$250 now, I think.
Is it $250? Is it down that much?
$299.
I think it's $249. I think it's,
but it was $349 when it came out, or $399 even. Right. I don't remember, but it was more. Yeah, so that is a good thing if you're looking for whole home audio. Like you want to play a song and have it be in sync, whatever room you walk into. That's not a big thing for me. You know, it's like I don't usually walk from room to room very much. And if I did, I would put in my AirPods Pro and the music would follow me.
Sure.
So, you know, having whole home audio or wasn't high on my list of features that are really attractive in a speaker.
Did you get the AirPods Max, by the way?
I didn't get the Max. I got the Pro. I thought about getting the Max, and then I thought, you know what? I don't want to have to review them because I don't feel like my hearing is that great anymore. And I suspect they sound really good, but I'm not a target market for a $500 earphone.
$550.
Yeah, I know. I'm just not in the market. I'm not in the market for a $300 earphone.
Well, let me tell you,
AirPods Pro kind of are at the top, tippy top of what I feel like, you know, I'm going to spend on a set of earphones or headphones.
I hear you.
$250.
I absolutely hear you. And
that's really out there for me. When I bought the first AirPods for $159,
I thought,
that's okay. When I bought the original AirPods, I thought, $159, that's just really at the top of my scale for earphones. Then the pros came out, and I thought, oh, noise canceling would really be good when I work in the wood shop. And it is. It's great. I love the noise canceling. I think, very good.
The AirPods Max have, I think, better noise canceling.
I'm sure they do.
And
they for three times the price.
They are extraordinarily comfortable.
Everybody says so.
That's the thing that I like most about them is the comfort.
Did you buy some?
Yeah.
Okay.
Out of the box, the sound quality I thought was way too Beats-like, way too muddy, way too
bassy.
What I've long said is like dragging your music through a swamp full of oatmeal.
And yeah, I'd say that.
I don't like that.
Fixed it.
I made it better. Apple should give us an EQ. They don't. They give you three A/B tests, and they say, right, which, you know, better one, better two,
better worse,
and then they make a recommendation that you could have just chosen yourself, but with AirPods Max there are three different settings. There's like standard, vocal, and then brightness. So standard basically emphasizes the bass. Vocal, theoretically, I haven't actually tested the vocal. It boosts the vocal frequencies, and then the brightness emphasizes basically the high end. And when I turned the brightness on, it worked for me. I am 54 years old, about to turn 55 in a month and a half or so, and that means that I've got some high end.
Lost a little on the top, right?
Lost a little on the top, right?
Me too.
Right.
And that's the thing is that I'm 65. I'll be 66 in April. And I feel like even though I had my hearing tested a year ago and my hearing loss at the high frequencies is surprisingly minimal considering I was a roadie and worked on stage.
That's shocking.
Before we knew that we needed ear protection.
Right.
You know, I mean, I was on stage every night with 100 plus dB sound pressure levels for 2 hours.
Sure.
But I was young and it apparently didn't do any damage. I mean, I'm shocked that I hear as well as I do. But even so, I think at this point,
there's damage and there's natural frequency loss as we age. And I think we lose a little off the bottom and we lose more off the top.
More off the top. And so I don't feel like I'm really the right person to review a high-end earphone because I wouldn't buy one, and I'm not positive that I could really hear the difference as much as I used to. You know, I used to be I could put on any earphone and basically tell you if it was any good or not in 30 seconds of listening to music of my choice. Mm. And I don't feel like I'm that good anymore. So I did not ask for AirPods Pro to review.
You mean
and I'm Pro certainly Max. Not buying any. Pro Max, yeah.
So I find I wear them for phone calls around the house.
Okay.
And even, you know, keep them on my ears when I go outside to walk Ichabod, Commander Ichabod, when he needs to go outside. I will keep them on my head and with my phone calls. And I have laid in bed listening to music. They are not. If it wasn't for my job, I probably would have returned these.
So I got Comply. You know what Comply ear tips are?
Yeah.
They're the squeezy foam.
Yeah.
So they finally came out with them for AirPods Pro. And I got a set of those for my AirPods Pro. And now I can literally wear them all day if I need to. Mm. They really are so like unnoticeable. I sometimes put them in, and even though I haven't turned on any source material, like an hour later, I'll go, oh, shit, I got these things in my ears. I should probably take them out. That's how comfortable I am with them.
Hold on.
And
let me make a note about where I'm going to need to go in and edit.
Did I say the S word?
You said the other S word, yes.
That's what I thought. Sorry. Yeah, you should take that out because this is a family podcast.
Yes, it is. Okay, go ahead, please.
Where was I?
You were talking about the company.
Hmm. Yeah, so once I put those on my AirPods Pro, they not only stop falling out of my ears once in a while, but they are comfortable, like, for hours. Mm. And I love them for the phone. I mean, everybody I talk to on the phone when I've got them in says, wow, are you on a landline? I mean,
that's the other thing with the AirPods Max. It does sound
so good.
The AirPods Max have more room for more microphones, and they have more microphones. And I apparently sound better, and it handles outside noise reduction
even better. Well, that's good
for my listen for like the person I'm on the phone with.
Yeah, if I talked on the phone much, I might even consider them, but I don't.
No, that's really expensive, man. It's insanely expensive.
That's so much
especially for a phone earphone. And while they do sound, like I said, a lot better with this brightness setting for me, they're pretty expensive despite how well made and comfortable they are.
I have a pair of Grado SR60s that I've had for probably 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
And they were, when I bought them, under $100.
Mm.
Now they're, I don't know, one something. And they have, you know, slightly better models today. But even so, to me, those sound about as good as earphones can sound.
Sure.
And I can put on $1,000 earphones with a special preamp and say, yeah, that sounds really good, but not terribly better than my Grados that I've had for 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
And those have always kind of been my go-to reference headphone, because for $100 they're amazing, and they've won tons of awards for how good they sound vis-a-vis their prices. You know, so whatever you buy from Grado, they're in Brooklyn, New York, and they basically make this stuff by hand.
Cool.
So yeah, 20 years later, I'm still using them here and using them as kind of the baseline comparison. Is like, okay, so I can get those for $110 today on Amazon. Do these $500 earphones really sound that much better? The thing is, the Grados are open foam, so you can't use them for recording.
Mm, right.
So I have, of course, a set of Sony, whatever all the disc Johnnies use.
You know what I've got in my ear for this podcast? Is I've got a pair of wired Apple EarPods.
Ew.
That's what I use for podcasting.
My ears would reject that.
I've got AirPods Pro in my pocket. I've got AirPods Pro Max sitting here on my desk, and I've got EarPods actually in my ear for recording a podcast because I need wired headphones. Yeah.
I know. I'm using my Sony. What are they? Hold on a second. Sony. Hold on. I got to turn the light on. Yeah, you know, your ears aren't the only thing to fail when you get old. These are MDR V600s.
Sure.
They're just, you know, they're just studio. Very sexy name. Yeah, they're studio headphones, but they keep it all in. You're not hearing any echo or feedback, are you?
No, I'm not. And then the issue for folks who are listening to us, the issue with wired headphones when you're recording is that you end up getting latency with
wireless,
and that works for a phone call, does not work for a podcast. You end up talking over each other, it becomes a real problem. Okay, Bob.
I agree. I rarely use my wireless headsets when I do any kind of video or conference or even audio recording like this.
So
I use a wired headset.
Where do you come down on HomePod Mini? Did you return them?
HomePod, I'm going to return them because they're Apple's. You know, they lent them to me for a review. I'm going to return them, and they're not something I think I would buy for myself.
Got it.
However, I think if you're, you know, deeply ingrained in the Apple HomeKit ecosystem.
Or want to be.
They're probably a good choice.
I agree with that.
It just didn't make any sense because I've got the capabilities I need with the A-Lady and Bluetooth speakers. And really, the intercom thing was cute, but it's not something that, you know, I was going to base my workflows on in the future.
I'd still like to see Apple come out with a very inexpensive microphone for HomeKit. So something that it competes
like
more.
Like an Echo Dot.
Something that competes more with the Echo Dot. $20, $30. Something,
hook it up to your own speaker.
I kind of have a hard time seeing Apple do that. But yes, that would work. Or even have it come out of another speaker. I don't know. Just something so that you can put, you know.
So you can get into this deal for less than $200.
Yeah.
Because really, who's going to buy one HomePod mini? You know, if you're going to buy one, you're going to buy two or more.
Unless you have a really tiny place.
Unless you have the regular HomePod. But, you know, you're looking at a $200 investment to get in the game there. If they could bring that down to $30 so that you could play, then I think maybe HomeKit stuff would sell better.
Have it be all over your house. And don't get me wrong, you can yell at your HomePod that's in another room, and it's, if it hears you, it'll respond. But that's not...
But so does A-Lady.
That's even inferior to like lifting your wrist up to your face.
I use my wrist most of the time because you don't even have to say, hey, S-Lady.
Sure.
On the other hand, I notice my watch starts listening if I like look to see what time it is.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times it's like it starts listening. It's like, no, I have nothing to say to you.
Right.
And
all right.
Bubbles on the screen, you know.
Let's move on to Apple Arcade. I was kind of surprised when you pitched this because Arcade has not been much of a hit.
No, because it was $5 a month. So here's the thing. When Apple introduced Apple One, and I pay now the same I pay a little less than I was paying before for three of the six services,
mm-hmm.
right? So the deal is Apple One lets me have Apple News, Apple Fitness, and Arcade basically for free because I was paying for a family music pack, I was paying for iCloud storage, and I was paying for Apple TV Plus. Although I guess I hadn't paid for it yet, but I would have because it was $5 a month and I like a bunch of shows on it and it would have been worth it. So anyway, my bill now is $30 a month for the whole family. And we all five of us have access to all six of Apple services.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And Arcade's one of them. So like when Arcade came out, I thought, I don't even care enough to try it for 30 days free.
Well, five of you, does Vila the Wonder Dog have a...
No, there's me, there's Lisa, there's Jacob, there's Allison, and either my sister or Lisa's brother.
Got it, of course.
Because we're a family plan.
Got it.
You know, you got to fill up all those slots with somebody.
Yeah.
So anyway, for $30 a month, we all have all of the services and 2 terabytes of iCloud storage.
Right.
And that's a great deal for us because, I was paying the same or less or about the same for only half of that stuff last month or 2 months ago. And as far as I can tell, I'm just getting a bunch of stuff free by bundling it, which is for the first time I'm happy about a bundle.
Okay.
I got rid of cable TV because the bundles made me crazy.
Yeah.
But in this case, I'm good with it.
All of this is a great endorsement of Apple One, but you specifically want to talk about Apple Arcade.
Well, yeah, because at $5 a month extra, I wouldn't have even looked at it. I did not take advantage of the 30-day free trial.
Mm.
I looked at it and I went, I don't even care. You know, it's like, I'm not going to pay $5 a month to play games. But then it became free, essentially. And I started playing games and I found a bunch of things about it that I really like. Number one, you can play most of the games on whatever Apple device happens to be near you.
Hmm.
So you can start a game on your Mac, play it on your iPhone for a while, then finish off on your Apple TV later. That's cool.
That is cool.
I mean, that's really cool. And for adventure games that have a long, path with a lot of story, It's great because it remembers where you left off. You just have to be near a device. So if you're near a device with a big screen, play it on a big screen. If you're out and about and you want to play for a while, play it on your iPhone or iPad. Very cool. Another thing I really liked, it supports game controllers. You know, the ones that look like, in fact, not just look like. It supports Xbox and PlayStation controllers. Not all, but some. As well as pretty much any Bluetooth like game controller. So I bought a $35 game controller on Amazon, and it's really fun for doing stuff like car race games.
Sure.
Where you need four buttons and a joystick, right?
Right.
And that's really kind of cool. It's like for the first time. So I bought one that has a little cradle for the iPhone.
Yeah,
so I can use it with my Apple TV or my iPhone
right.
for $35, and it's like a real game controller, which is pretty cool.
Which is pretty cool. So I have been subscribing to Arcade from the beginning.
Uh-huh.
So I did do the 30-day trial, and I played multiple games at first and then haven't gone back to any of them and yet still haven't canceled it, but now I'm on Apple One, so it probably doesn't matter.
I don't think I would pay $5 a month to do this, but since I have it for free, I go on there. You know, if I'm not doing anything else, I'll go on whatever device I'm on, look for an interesting game and play it for a while. I haven't found anything I'm in love with enough to play to the end, but I've started a bunch of games that, you know, if I were like on a trip and bored, I would go back to and play some more.
I've got a slightly different way of looking at Arcade, because I think that the $5 a month price is an incredible value if you're playing the games.
Exactly. And that is the point I try to make in this column is I would have never even looked, because I'm not the target market. I'm just, you know, not the guy that's going to buy a game or play a game for money. I 20 years ago, I kind of lost interest in it.
Sure.
But today, having all these games on all my devices is really fun. And I think maybe if there wasn't Apple One, I would reconsider paying $5 a month for all these games.
But you only tried it because of Apple One. It is an incredible $5. $5 for
$60 a year is more than I spend on games in any of the past 10 years.
But it is still nothing if you're going to even play one or two of them.
All the way through.
One or two of them, because there's no in-app purchases, and there's no, they're not ad-supported.
Which ones did you like?
Let me look. I was doing a lot of the, I actually wrote about some of them back when this was new.
Mm-hmm. Did you play What the Golf?
I did not.
That's really.
I've never been a big golfing. Like, they don't,
well, here's the thing. What the Golf is this wacky miniature golf thing, but you instead of playing miniature golf, you swing at objects like you instead of a golf ball, you hit a couch and try to get it on the green or a lamp. It's really bizarre, and I like that. That works for me. Bizarreness.
The one I played the most was, and I can't remember what it was called. It's a great game. You have to motorways. Is that what it's called? Motor? Did you play that one?
You basically, it's the one where you build the roadways and
yeah, and you have to basically route the traffic so that you
right. Yeah, that yeah. I actually have that one on more than one device.
I love that
game. And that's one of the ones I will go back to and play some more.
And then I played Red. It was a fighting game. You build your stuff. You collect your resources, and you. Red Rain, REIGN. Very, very, very fun resource management combat game.
Okay.
And I played both of those the most, but then when I got busy with something and I stopped playing them, I never went back to them. And yet
they didn't call to you.
Well, they do call. No, they do. They're great games. Both of those games are great games.
And Myth 2 called to me. Rock Band on my Xbox.
Wait, is Myth,
called to
is
me.
Myth on Arcade?
No.
Oh, okay.
But I'm saying 25 years ago, I couldn't. If I had free time, I would play Myst.
Why did we not play Myst 2 against or with each other? Were you on?
I don't know, because I was on. I was in a clan here.
Yeah, so was I.
Had a bunch of guys that I called. Guys that I would call on the phone and go, "Okay, you ready? Let's go kick some ass."
What's
and we'd be on the phone with each other while we were playing.
What clan? All right,
you guys go around the. I don't even remember what it was called, but we had this one guy named Neil, who alone was better than anybody else. No, everybody else in the clan. Mm. And so anytime he was playing, if you were on his team, you just, you know, did what he told you to do and you won.
I was in the corporation. I don't suppose you
I was an emperor. I was an emperor.
Of course.
For a long time.
For a long time. That's on the leaderboard. Yeah. Yeah. I loved Myst 2.
Myst 2 was my favorite game of all time.
Yeah. I would. Yeah.
I've never seen another game that you know, had that perfect balance of teamwork and.
But it was also twitchiness. Fun to play. The single player version of the game, too, was also fun. I wish
really fun.
That Bungie would. I don't even know if there's anyone at Bungie that was still around back then, that was around then, that's still at the company today, but I wish they would.
Oh, they're all retired. They got really rich, and
I wish they would
Microsoft bought them. I agree.
Franchise.
I agree. You know that there is a Pathways into Darkness patch for the current Macs. Mm. You can play Pathways into Darkness, which was kind of like the very primitive precursor to the first Myst.
Mm.
We used to play that a lot at Power Computing. It was a network game.
Is there a way to play Myst on a modern Mac?
Not that I know of. There was, I think, for a while, an emulator that you could maybe do it on, but...
Like, you know, could you install something on Parallels that would play it?
I don't think so. Maybe.
Like, I wonder if it plays on...
If you ran like Mac OS 8... Or 9 on something.
Yeah, maybe. Right. What about running on a Windows in Parallels?
You know what? Myst 2 was a Windows and Mac game, right?
Yeah, we were. Yeah, it was kind of annoying.
Well, yeah, and this guy Neil that was so good played on a PC and he used to make fun of us.
Did you know, Bob? Did you know that? Did you ever notice this? The Windows players did not use the shortcuts, the groupings.
No.
Yeah, they didn't. And I could never figure it out. It's like, what, you know, it's like, because you know, for me, I had, I think my archers were always command one, and then my doors were usually command two. And you know, I did the same thing every time so that I would never have to think about it. And so you would select a group and you would designate a keyboard shortcut to call them up. Whether or not they were on your screen, very, very useful in Myst 2. Windows guys never did that, and I could never figure out why until I learned that for them to call it up, it was Control. Control 1, Control 2, Control 3. And so you're having to use your pinky instead of your thumb.
Huh.
And it's very not...
Awkward, yeah.
It's very awkward, very not convenient, very not comfortable, very not fast.
Oh, good. So that gave us a little advantage.
Yeah, it gave Mac users a tremendous advantage.
Yeah, except that this guy Neil was playing on a PC and he could kick any of our butts.
Hmm.
He could kick all of our butts at once.
Hmm.
So, the other one that I've been playing lately is the Zombie Rollers Pinball Heroes.
Are we back to arcade?
Yeah, it's kind of a combination of classic pinball and a tower defense game, and it's got really fun
animation. Fun.
It is. It's really fun.
Huh.
And then Warp Drive Teleport Racing is one of those race car games, but this one has this cool twist. There's shortcuts and hidden routes, and if you hit one, you teleport immediately to a different part of the track. So it's like, whoosh, and all of a sudden you're, you know, in the pack again, and then they go away, and you find a shortcut.
So there you are, Bob. You're playing some games on arcade. You apparently picked up at least one of the games that I was originally playing. It was out on release, and you're playing that even though you weren't playing back then. My question is, having found a couple of games, are you just sort of sticking with those, or do you end up you know.
No, I've got 28 on my iPhone. I just counted for the article I just wrote, for the column I wrote. So there's 28 on my iPhone, of which I've probably played half of them.
Mm-hmm.
The other ones I've maybe opened and looked at, or looked at the tutorial and not played.
But you're again. Open to finding more.
Oh, absolutely. And I check regularly on all my devices to see, you know, what's new and what's being promoted. So I'm still actively getting new ones. I'm just not playing them as often maybe as I might or could.
So Arcade to you is a winner.
Yeah. And I said, you know, why not visit Apple.com and start a 1 month free trial, which anybody can have. Or if you buy any new iPhone, iPad, Mac, iPod Touch, or Apple TV, you get 3 months free. So, you know,
my Apple One, point was, included.
Why not try it? Then if you get Apple One, it's like they throw it in for free. But basically, for now, you can try it for a month or 3 months and see how you like it. If you like it, $5 a month's a pretty reasonable price.
Yeah, and they're quality games. Apple's vetting them pretty carefully, and they're paying for some of the development for some of the games, or at least bankrolling it.
The quality of them is really good. I haven't had any of them that gave me trouble or crashed or anything else, and they all have what I call, you know, A grade graphics and
playability.
Yeah,
and they're not. There's no ad supported stuff. There's no ads, and there's no in-game.
You don't have to buy more gold or whatever.
Yeah, no in-app purchases.
Yeah.
So it's all included in the $5. And that part I love, which was the point I was making about $5 a month being dirt cheap, even if you're playing just one or two of those games. That's nothing.
I agree. But it took until I could play it for free for a while.
Yeah.
To get me interested, even though there was a free trial. That wasn't enough. It's like only when I had access to it for months on end for free did I go check it out. And that's why I wrote a column, because it's like, you know, if you didn't check it out when it first happened, you might want to. It's really pretty good. I'm surprised. I said I was. In fact, let's see. What was my headline? I don't know if I said Apple Arcade. It's better than I expected.
All right. Fair enough. All right, so
that's pretty much, that sums it up. It was better than I expected.
Let me take a moment. Let me tell you all about Molecule. Molecule makes an air purifier, and I've had, I think my long-term listeners will know this. I've had two that I bought in my home when I first moved into the place I'm living now, two and a half years ago. And I got them because I was concerned about fire season in California, when sometimes the air quality can get really bad. And I've been very, very glad that I've had them since. Now, let me tell you about Molecule's current product line. You've got the Molecule Air, that's designed for large rooms up to 600 square feet. You've got the Molecule Air Mini, that's designed for small rooms up to 250 square feet. The Molecule Air Mini Plus, that helps protect small rooms with a particle sensor and auto protect mode, which adjusts fans based on the sensor. Then you've got the Molecule Air Pro. It's designed for extra large rooms up to 1,000 square feet. And here's an interesting one. Molecule Air Pro RX received 510K Class 2 medical device clearance for medical purposes to destroy bacteria and viruses in the air. Of course, Molecule's technology has been verified with rigorous testing from independent third-party labs. Now, this is how Molecule works. The technology was developed over 20 years ago by the director of the Clean Energy Research Center at the University of South Florida, and they call it PICO. It's photoelectrochemical oxidation, PICO technology, scientifically proven to break down pollutants to their safer molecular components. And that they do that without producing any ozone. That's a known lung irritant. The patented PICO technology in all Molecule devices has been able to destroy viruses for years, but now helping reduce risk to exposure to viruses in the home or workplace is more vital than ever. Ain't that the truth? In fact, Molecule's PICO technology meets performance criteria in FDA guidance for use in helping to reduce risk of exposure to SARS-CoV-2 in healthcare settings during the COVID-19 emergency. All right? It's pretty cool stuff. So instead of just collecting pollutants like other air purifiers, molecule air purifiers destroy them. Viruses, mold, allergens, bacteria, and chemicals like VOCs get destroyed by molecules' PICO process. In fact, PICO destroys pollutants 1,000 times smaller than what the HEPA filter standard tests for. Right? The HEPA standard, what it's testing for, PICO destroys pollutants that are 1,000 times smaller. So, again, I've had my two molecules in my home that I bought right after I moved in. I was concerned about fire season in California. Always concerned about fire season in California. The air can get really bad sometimes. And I love having these things on my home. Now, because you are a listener to the Apple Context Machine, you can get 10% off your first air purifier order. You do that by visiting molekule.com, M-O-L-E-K-U-L-E.com, and at checkout, enter the code ACM. And I appreciate them sponsoring. I hope you enjoy your molecule if you get one, and you very much want to check this company out. All right, Bob, let's see now. Let's look at our third topic. You had your hands on a new M1. What'd they send you, a MacBook Pro? Or Mac
Mini? I bought it.
Oh, you
I
bought it.
Yeah, see, here's the thing. I asked for one to review, and they said, well, they're all out, and you know, we'll let you know when some come in. And I didn't feel like waiting, and I'm about to replace my current MacBook Pro, which is a 2013, which were 16 gigs of RAM, 1 terabyte SSD, and it works great. I'm not getting rid of it because it's past its prime, but it's going to be. I mean, it's 8 years old already. So I'm thinking it's time to replace it. I tried to buy a MacBook Pro with 16 gigs of RAM. And there was a, I don't know, 45-day wait. And that was in December.
This is for the 13-inch M1 MacBook Pro.
Right. And it's still bad because I looked a couple weeks ago and it was sometime in February. So you still can't get a 16-gig machine anytime soon. But I thought, okay, well, I can get an 8-gig machine. And I keep listening to this podcast. There's this other podcast, you know. There are other podcasts, Brian.
Really? Strange words you speak.
I listened to one called Mac Geek Gab.
That's a good one.
I like that one. And there's this guy on there that keeps saying, you know, 8 gigabytes of RAM might be enough.
He's wrong.
I agree now, but I thought, okay, I'll take him up on it.
For some so people, actually,
If you're not doing the kind of things that I do, which is, you know, running Mimo Live, running Final Cut Pro, GarageBand, Logic Pro, things like that benefit from 16 gigs of RAM.
I have 3 browsers open and probably...
Well, you need more RAM than me.
More than 100.
Browsers are notorious for sucking up RAM.
Yes, and I have probably more than 100 tabs open between the three different browsers.
32 gigs of RAM.
I've got 64 in my iMac, Bob.
And that's still not enough.
I feel like it's not enough.
Now, the M1s are more efficient
with way more efficient.
Managing and handling memory, and I thought maybe I could get away with 8.
Mm-hmm.
So I ordered it with 8.
Mm-hmm.
And for the first, the Apple has a 14-day money back, you know, no questions asked return policy. So for the first week, I was thrilled. I didn't have one issue. Everything worked except Parallels, and I didn't expect Parallels to work. But everything else I tried worked, and a lot of the stuff worked amazingly well for 8 gigs of RAM.
Mm-hmm.
Like Final Cut, I was doing stuff that would bring my 2013 Intel Core 7 i7 to a standstill in 8 gigs of RAM on the M1.
That's amazing.
In Final Cut. Yeah, I was like adding layers of effects and real time. I was able to preview all of my effects in real time, which, you know, on my machine, I have to wait and let it render because it just doesn't have the horsepower to show me most transitions and effects and titles in real time. And this was letting me do like 3 and 4 things at once, any one of which would bring my current computer to its knees.
Sure.
I was shy. I was amazed. Same thing with GarageBand. I opened up a file that I know makes my current computer stutter and throw up error messages that says some of what you just recorded wasn't recorded because your disk couldn't keep up. And that stuff ran fine. And so everything was
which
great.
Is amazing.
I was so impressed with it. So then, oh, you'll like this because this story involves your mother. So then I was a guest at the CapMac user group, and of course we meet by Zoom.
Right, currently.
And I decided I was going to use MIMO Live.
Okay.
So that I could look really professional and have like a lower third, and I could have exactly the size of me that I wanted and exactly the size of my slides that I wanted, and I could play videos on command and things like that that are harder to do in a Zoom, you know, in a standard Zoom window. And I was really, I spent all day setting stuff up, and it worked great all day. And then I got on live with them, and I did the whole presentation. I got to the, I don't know, next to the last slide, and I was talking about the M1 and how impressed I was. And I saw in the corner of my eye on my big monitor a little alert that said, "You are completely out of memory." And then everything locked up.
That's less useful.
And it took me about five or six minutes to get back up and running and reconnect with the user group. And that was when I decided 8 gigs wasn't enough.
Yeah, that makes sense. Now, for a whole lot of users, and probably even the vast majority of users, Dave is correct that 8 is enough.
I agree.
For normal folks doing normal computing things,
most of the time, 8 is plenty.
Right.
However, then that's only with M1. I think if you're on an Intel processor, it's more like 16.
Yeah, you really do. He's been saying,
I mean, because you fill up that 8 so fast.
Right. And a lot of that will depend on the speed of your SSD. And also, I mean, like, you know, 8 is certainly has more of a chance of being enough if you have an SSD versus a hard drive, et cetera.
Well, the M1s, because all of that stuff is integrated, are brilliantly fast. Like, right. Starting up from a cold boot, it was about 3 times faster than my Intel machine.
Also
waking
amazing.
Up from sleep was instant. Rather than like, it takes my machine about 15 seconds before I get control of everything in both monitors when it wakes up. You know, it's one of those things. I'm used to it. It's okay. But when I had the M1, it was like, oh my gosh, I don't have to wait 1 second. When I press a key, it's ready instantly. You
know, my iMac wakes up from sleep almost instantly, not as fast as an M1. But I'm not waiting 15 seconds. That's crazy.
Second monitor. I know it's because of my second monitor. But connecting everything through, I had an Anker Thunderbolt 3 dock. And using that with the monitor, cut it from 15 seconds to like 2 seconds. So I'm positive it's the display.
Sure. All right. Fair enough. So,
and it's the second display. If the built-in display comes up instantly, even on my Intel Mac,
what'd you do?
Almost instantly.
What'd you do with your 8 gig device?
I sent it back.
You sent it back. Okay. You returned it.
I returned it. Yeah. And I was gonna order a 16 gig, and then I realized it's still going to be a month or a month and a half before I get my hands on that. And when that happens, we're going to be close to the 16-inch MacBook Pro, maybe, or iMac with an Apple processor. And here's the thing. I my little experiment convinced me that I probably will never buy another Mac with an Intel processor. There's no need. Everything I use runs fine on an M1, except Parallels, which I don't really use. It's just something I keep an eye on for, you know, work reasons, but I'm not a PC guy. I mean, plus I know they're beta testing a native version that I'm sure will be fine, you know, in a few months. So if that were a gating factor for me in a few months, it probably won't be anymore. But for me, I can't imagine not buying an M1 or an Apple Silicon Mac next time and time after and time after and time after. I'm very impressed. So I just hope they introduce more. You know, they said it's going to be a 2-year transition. So I hope the next batch they introduce with an M2 processor or whatever will include something that I want to buy to replace my MacBook Pro, my Intel MacBook Pro.
So that's actually what I wanted to talk about was we know that more Macs are going to be coming. We don't know what Apple's going to be doing. For instance, I'm going to have a problem if the maximum RAM you can get on an iMac
16
is 16.
I don't think that's going to be a problem going forward. I think when they get to the iMac and the Mac Pro, it's going to be 64 or 128 or it unlimited. It should be.
But so how is Apple going to do that? Because the M1 has the RAM right on the chip.
It's attached, right. It's part of it.
It's a system on the chip.
And that's why it's 16 or 8, and that's it.
Yeah.
You don't have a choice.
So we don't know what Apple's going to be doing with that yet.
But you got to figure they know that there are people who need more memory than 16. I would be surprised if not the MacBook, if not the iMac, certainly the Mac Pro will have, you know, up to 128 gigs or up to 256 gigs or something. I suspect the iMac will also because they already offer 64. I think you can put 128 in some of them. Or maybe that's the iMac Pro. And again, that's another thing. iMac Pro.
Yeah.
You can't introduce something like that and only have 16 gigs of RAM.
That thing's going away.
Well, if it's going away, that's fine. But if they're going to have a high-end iMac, it's going to need to
it needs more than 16. I don't care how fast the M2 or M3 is. It's going to need more. But does that mean that Apple's going to be supporting external RAM, or are they simply going to be building chips with that much on there? We don't know yet.
I suspect they're going to build the chips with it on there because the integration is part of what makes everything so fast.
This is true. This is true. But that certainly does make it complicates making these processors with that kind of memory.
Apple's been moving us towards this for years.
Yeah.
Think about it. How many Macs today can you open up and put a new RAM chip in?
Today there's still a few.
Right, iMac. Still a few.
Yeah.
But I'm saying Apple has been getting you used to the fact that if you don't order it with that much RAM,
right,
you're not getting that anymore.
Right. All right, so
you know, it's like that starts to become part of your baseline equation. It's like, okay, I'm going to buy a new Mac. I can't upgrade it, so maybe I should get 32 gigs.
Well, this is what I wanted to talk about right here. We're to it. What do people do who are in the market for a Mac right now? If you're in a market for a Mac right now, buy the Mac that you can get, right? That, I think that we both agree on that.
Yeah, I always say that.
Yeah.
You know, don't wait for something that hasn't been announced yet because it could be years.
A new Mac on your desk is worth two in a rumor bush.
That's correct.
And but let's say that you're kind of in the market. You know, you could wait, you could not wait, and you don't want one of the 3M1 Macs that are out there. Actually, I guess I need to take a step back, Bob. Do you agree with me that buying an Intel Mac at this point is not the best idea?
I would say for most people, that is probably the case. And the people that it's not the case for, which means, you know, we're talking about the people with 500 gigabyte graphics files with 800 layers. Burt Monroy, are you listening? People like that, they know that they need 64 or 128 gigs of RAM, and they know that maybe they're going to have to go one more generation of Intel. For
right.
the average user doing the average stuff, and especially if you're doing it with Apple's software,
yeah.
which is, you know, very efficient, I was shocked that how many tracks I could play in GarageBand
right.
with, the 8 gig M1.
Especially if you were the type of person who buys a Mac and keeps it for a lot of years. If you're going to keep your next Mac for a lot of years, and you can wait for the M processor, might not be the M1
that will fit your needs.
Do so.
Yeah,
that's
where I'm at.
Well, that's where I'm at. I don't want to buy another Intel processor, so I'm waiting for an appropriate M1 or M anything based something. I don't know if my next machine will be an iMac or MacBook Pro. Mm-hmm. I might buy an iMac and a MacBook Air.
Yeah, sure. That's a great combo.
I used to be of the opinion that I only wanted to have one computer.
And take it with you. Take it from your desk.
I wanted to close it up and take it with me with all my stuff.
Right.
But that doesn't really work. So
why not?
Well, because my music and my photos don't fit on the internal storage.
Oh, yeah, because you need the external storage to begin with, yeah.
So, and I'm using a second monitor. So I'm thinking, you know, I would probably be very happy with an iMac on my desk. And a MacBook Air I could just grab if I need to work outside of my office. And really, with things like Dropbox and iCloud, it's pretty easy for me to organize everything so I can access it from either device.
Yeah.
And, you know, at $1,000, it almost makes sense to not spend $4,000 on a MacBook Pro, but spend $3,000 on a iMac and $1,000 on a MacBook Air and have the best of both worlds and two computers.
Yep.
I think that's where I'd like to go, but I have to see what Apple releases this year, because I may be forced into making a decision. I mean, this machine that I'm using today is 8 years old. It could fail at any moment. I know that.
Okay.
You know,
That's great, Bob. So this is a great opportunity. So here we just said that. First of all, please understand that we both know that we're speaking from a privileged position of being able to choose to buy an iMac and a MacBook Air if that's what we wanted. Okay.
Well, yeah.
We realize that.
I'm semi-retired, so it's harder for me now than it used to be to make a call like that. But I could, and I would if that were the appropriate call.
Not everybody can make that call is my point, and we are both aware of that. But we also both just said if you can wait for an M processor Mac that fits your needs, do the waiting. But now let's say that you can't. Let's say
failed today,
what would you do?
A 16 gig MacBook Pro
and wait for it.
13 inch and wait a month. You know, I've got a MacBook Air here that I could use. Mm. It would really be a struggle because it's an old one and it's just, you know. But I could use it until my new M-powered Mac showed up. So if I had to order something tomorrow, I'd order a 16 gig. Whoa, I have to think about it. I might actually order a 16 gig Mac Mini. Mm. I don't know. But I would order a 16 gig M processor rather than order anything with an Intel tomorrow. And then I think if 16 gigs turned out not to be enough, which I think would, I don't think I would find that. I think I would be comfortable in 16 because I'm comfortable in 16 with an Intel processor. I rarely feel like I'm pushing my RAM to the limit. Mm-hmm. So I'm guessing on an M processor, I'd be even more comfortable.
Yeah.
And 16 would be plenty. But if it weren't, well, you know, these are Apple products. They hold their value pretty well. Yep. After a year, I could sell that MacBook Pro and buy the iMac with the M3 and 32 gigs of RAM.
So, long story short, I think we're both pretty much on the same page. Yeah.
Yeah, I would go for an M, even if it meant I had to, you know, compromise on some of the specs I might have wanted, which is to say 32 gigs of RAM, maybe.
Yeah. All right, Bob, also, thank you very much.
I'll give you one more word of advice. When you order these things, order the biggest SSD you can afford.
Always.
Because that's another thing that you can't really easily go back and, you know,
yeah, the most RAM you can afford and the most SSD you can afford.
I agree. Dave argues sometimes. Dave says, you know, you don't need more than 256 gigs of storage locally. It's like, well, if you want to, like, bring any movies with you, You do?
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm not. So, no, I have a, what do they call it? His network appliance that he loves so much. Yeah, his Synology. Oh, I've got a Synology. It's like, yeah, well, I don't want the overhead of managing a Synology.
Yeah, not most people don't have a Synology.
I know. It's like, I'm not as geeky as you, Dave.
Well, but you are listening to the Matt Geek Gab when you're.
Well, I love that show because they help me with a lot of stuff. And they also, you know, a lot of times I'll listen to the show and it'll give me an idea of something I want to pursue for a column that would make a good, more broad and general thing. You know, I hear something on there. You know, I bet my readers in the newspaper and at Mac Observer would
sure.
benefit from hearing more about that.
Sure. All right, Bob, thank you. Listen, we're out of time, man. I want to actually first let me do this thing. Watch this. This is how we do this. That is this week's Apple Context Machine. If you have anything to comment on, add a question, you can write me at acm@macobserver.com. Our bandwidth is provided by Cashfly, the basis by Boom, recorded just for TMO. Molecule was our sponsor. And to remind you, you can get 10% off your first air purifier order by visiting molecule.com. That's molekule.com. And at checkout, enter the code ACM. Bob, thank you so much, man. I appreciate you being here this week, and I appreciate you sharing your perspective.
Always my pleasure, Brian. Anytime.
All right. Thanks, brother. We will see you or hear you or you will hear. I don't know. Whatever. Check this out.
That was good.
Sure. Let's go with that.